and welcome to the D3Football.com Around the Nation podcast for the week of November 12, 2007. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And welcome to the playoffs. 32 teams in, a handful of teams that feel left out, but a fairly interesting bracket. I'm working without benefit of a teleprompter, but might I say, it's about time we get a bracket that looks like this.
Yeah, I mean, the committee had become, in recent years, so predictable that you and Gordon were able not just to nail the 32 teams or the 31 of the 32 teams that would be in the bracket, but you also had a good pairing, a good handle on what the pairings would be. And I think this year we definitely saw a few curveballs, you know, just jumping off the bracket. Ithaca at Mountain Union is one. Olivet going to Central in that Central bracket. And, well, even just the top of each bracket. You know, Capital going to Whitewater is another one. And Widener at Case Western is another really interesting matchup that not a lot of people probably foresaw. But also the fact that they went with the number one seeds in each bracket.
The NCAA basically will bus anybody within 500 miles, and in the past, you know, they've said they've tried to balance the brackets, that they've done it basically by moving teams that were lower seeded out of one bracket into another. This time, really just an overhaul. Mountain Union going into the East into a bracket where there really wasn't a standout number one seed. There have been years in the past where there hasn't been a standout number one seed either, and the NCAA has done nothing about it.
Yeah, and this was an opportunity. Almost the situation dictated that you had to do something with the number one seeds, because there was Mountain Union, clearly a number one seed. Whitewater was clearly a number one. Central was clearly a number one. And then Washington Jefferson, I think, was the fourth number one on the board. But there wasn't really anyone else on the board that was really fighting for that number one. Maybe you could make a case for somebody like Muhlenberg, who was also 10-0. But then you have Whitewater and Central both being in the West, and there was really no way you could make one of those teams a two seed, so we had to spread everything out.
Whitewater sitting kind of in the southeast corner of Wisconsin, more or less a natural fit into the North bracket. The Wisconsin champion has played in the North bracket before. Mountain Union in the eastern half of Ohio, Ithaca easily within 500 miles, St. John Fisher within 500 miles. Curry, not within 500 miles of Mountain Union, but then again, the conference has gone 0-8 in the tournament, and the fact that Curry has a three seed and maybe a chance to win a first-round game is probably as good as you can hope to expect if you're an NEFC fan.
Absolutely. I mean, they have to be happy with that matchup. But by the same token, you know, like you said, Mountain Union is a natural fit in the East. It's really not that far from Pennsylvania. And then Central being out there in Iowa, you know, a lot of those schools in Minnesota are right there, short drive from Iowa. So really, we've talked in so many times about having regional brackets, Northwest, East, South, and regions do play a part in the selection process, but the brackets do not have to be made by region. And this year, as if you look on the bracket on the website, they're called the Mountain Union bracket, the Central bracket, the Washington Jefferson bracket, and the UW Whitewater bracket, and that's because they really aren't true Northwest, East, South brackets this year.
Looking at the Central bracket for just a minute, Redlands, the only team from the West Coast that got in. Whitworth, I'm sure, was thinking that it was going to get in. We thought Whitworth was going to get in. Whitworth was ahead of Wisconsin-Eau Claire in the last regional rankings that were posted that we got to see. And then all of a sudden, somehow, Eau Claire jumps above them. And I haven't really been able to figure out why that is. It seems like Whitworth has a huge advantage in one criteria, and then Eau Claire has some minor advantages in some of the others.
Yeah, if strength of schedule was where they had the minor advantage. Regional winning percentage was where Whitworth had the major advantage with that 8-1 region record. They each had a common opponent in UW Stout, and it was a 2-point game and a 3-point game. Both Whitworth and Eau Claire won. So it was definitely difficult to tell what the committee preferred as far as taking Eau Claire over Whitworth. We've kind of theorized that the committee has sort of decided that they're going to take number two teams from strong conferences and put teams that have played strong schedules and played in strong conferences. They're going to give them, I don't want to say preferential treatment, but they're going to respect that when it comes to the playoff process. But the flip side of that question is the Northwest Conference considers itself a strong conference, and Wheaton, another number two team in a strong conference, the CCIW, also got left out of the field.
The teams that kind of qualify under that umbrella that got in, Eau Claire, the second team in the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, a conference that has really gotten shafted in the selection process in previous years, and Capital, the number two team in the Ohio Athletic Conference. And basically, it seems like over the past 7 years, going back through the entire pools system, that a team that loses to Mountain Union basically gets a freebie, gets a mulligan.
Yeah, it's certainly not the same type of loss as losing a game in the regular season. And we'll probably talk about this in a minute here, Pat. Some of these teams who had confusing losses, losses that don't make sense when you have to do your rankings or you have to break things out. But a loss to Mountain Union can almost be expected. And you almost get a free pass for that loss. And then Central's almost judged like another one loss. Not Central, I'm sorry, Capital is almost judged like another one loss team.
Elsewhere in the central bracket, Bethel, the number two seed after beating St. John's, winning the automatic bid for the second year in a row. Bethel has been in the playoffs several times over the course of the pools period, but has not won a game, and this would have to be the season they're hosting Concordia, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and Concordia in their 7-3 season, coming off a year where they were not as dominant as they've been in previous years. You know, last year they had that win against North Central earlier in the season where we thought maybe the Illini Badger had made that jump into being a competitive conference. Bethel, on the other hand, you know, they gear their season so much with ending that season every year with St. John's. Maybe it's hard for them to replicate that when it comes to the playoff game, that almost that regular season game is a bigger game to them than that playoff game, and they're not able to get it up again the next week for whatever reason.
Meanwhile, if you're St. Norbert, you got to be pretty much the unhappiest three seed on the board because you got Wisconsin-Eau Claire coming to your place. St. Norbert has been in the field many times. They've run the table in their conference and in the regular season three times. They've hosted just one playoff game, and that's the only game in the playoffs that they've won or that the Midwest Conference has won since the playoff expansion.
St. Norbert always gets that tough break because the West, as we like tonight, we don't have a true West region this time, but the West always has so many strong teams that even when St. Norbert goes undefeated, they almost always have to go on the road. So I think even right here, though they have Eau Claire coming to their place, you know, you have to beat good teams in the playoffs. And for them to have a home game, I think is something they can be happy with. And if you go back a couple years, I want to say maybe 03, they played La Crosse in the playoffs. They had that, they were leading in the second half of that game, and La Crosse scored a couple times late. And so I think, you know, St. Norbert since then has played Whitewater and not fared so well, but they can play against Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference team.
Moving to the W and J bracket, it's been a while since we've seen these two teams matched up against each other. I'm talking about 6th-seeded Trinity and 4th-seeded Mary Hardin Baylor. These teams have met 4 times in the playoffs, though, since expansion. Trinity won the first two. Mary Hardin Baylor won the next two, and it's really been all Mary Hardin Baylor in Texas ever since. Mary Hardin Baylor's passed Trinity. Hardin Simmons has passed Trinity. You know, every once in a while, you might think a third American Southwest Conference team is going to pass Trinity. How much does Trinity need to win this game?
Well, obviously, it's a playoff game, and they need to win. But to keep that profile in Texas when they're recruiting now they're not necessarily going out of the same pool of people when Mary Hardin Baylor is recruiting players. But they have been the dominant program in Texas. Trinity has for a long time, and American Southwest certainly is coming on. And I think Mary Hardin Baylor this year is going to be a very dangerous team, a team that was ranked 2nd in the country until they went up to Whitewater and lost at the end of October, and has since fallen a little bit below the radar. I mean, a 4 seed for a team that was in the top 4 in the country is certainly interesting, and they're going to be a dangerous team for Trinity to play.
Bottom half of that bracket, Muhlenberg, all defense, 63 yards a game they allow rushing, and Salisbury, you know, they just come in averaging almost 350 yards a game on the ground.
Yeah, that'll be one of those great matchups to watch where you get in the playoffs and you see one team's strength goes against another team's strength, and a lot of times in that situation, you look at the flip side and say, can Salisbury play enough defense to stop Muhlenberg's offense, or vice versa? And the game being at Muhlenberg, I think, is something, you know, we've talked about the Centennial Conference so many times being a conference that beats up on itself during the season. For a team to go 10-0 with a win over another playoff team is really a big step for the Centennial.
First time that Muhlenberg has gone undefeated through the regular season in the 107-year history of their program. Also, one other thing to note, Muhlenberg is one of the few teams left in Division III that still plays on the old-style AstroTurf. May play better to Salisbury, in fact. Hampton-Sydney getting into the playoffs for the first time since the early 1980s. And right off the bat, they go to the two-time region defending champ.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of offense in that game. Hampton-Sydney, very creative on offense, but Wesley has just a ton of speed and a ton of weapons, and it's going to be tough for Hampton-Sydney to match up, I think.
Moving down to the Whitewater bracket, we've basically got the two teams that know Mountain Union the best. Whitewater's faced them in the past two Stag Bowls. Capital faced them in the national quarterfinals, plus 3 times in the conference regular season over the past 3 seasons. So the only thing I can think about when looking at this is I'd sure like to see what Capital would have looked like in this game with its full offensive slate.
Absolutely. They've had injuries this year that have really, you want to use the word decimated. It's decimated them in terms of the players they expected to have on offense, but they fought through it. They finished with that 8-2 record, and they got into the field. And you look at that game and you just see the names Capital and Whitewater and you think, wow, that's going to be a monster game. But Capital has struggled a little bit this season, lived by their defense a little bit earlier in the year. And earlier in the year for Whitewater, you know, they've really lived it took them a little bit of time, I think, to get up to speed on offense with having a transfer quarterback and that sort of thing. But they've had a real dominant performance defensively late in the season. And I talked to Coach Bob Berezowitz for a different project I was working on. I talked to him earlier this week, and he said that defense is as good, if not better, than the last two defenses that went to the Stag Bowl.
It's Berezowitz, of course, who took Whitewater to the Stag Bowl the last two seasons and recently retired as the longtime head coach of the Warhawks. Now, if you're Capital, how many points do you have to hold Whitewater to in order to win this game?
I mean, 13 maybe? 21 would be the max, you know, because that's probably even too many, as I see you shaking your head over there, Pat. Capital really doesn't have all their weapons on offense, and they're going to have to play a great game defensively, maybe score on defense, if they want to make anything happen against Whitewater.
They'll be starting a quarterback who's making his second career start, but they do have Evan Blake, who was originally their number two wide receiver back. He's played the last 2 weeks. Moving down the bracket, fifth-seeded North Central heads to fourth-seeded Franklin. If you're a Franklin fan, you got to feel a little better about your 9-1 this season compared to last season when 9-1 didn't get you in as an at-large.
Yeah, how about that? 9-1 didn't get them in last season. It gets them a home game this season in the playoffs. And getting North Central, you'd think, wow, 8-2, that's a good matchup for them. But North Central, remember, lost those games early in the season. They played really well coming down the stretch here. They had to beat Illinois Wesleyan, and they had to beat Carthage the past 2 weeks to even have a chance of getting in the bracket. And they did. Both of those wins were very convincing, playing well on defense right now.
Wabash has to be kicking itself a little bit, I think, after losing the Monon Bell game on Saturday. They slipped from a number two in the regional rankings to the number three seed. Basically, may have cost themselves a second home game in the tournament if they advance.
Yeah, and not only that, you know, they could have been in that mix. I think St. John's and Wabash were teams that were looking like maybe they could be a one seed, and if not, they would be a two seed, and like you said, get a couple home games with undefeated records, and instead lost on Saturday, and then now Wabash drops down to that three seed. But they get Mount St. Joseph, a team that's in on pool C, didn't win its conference, and maybe they feel like they can handle.
Just to run through the common opponent, of course, there. Wabash defeated Franklin earlier in the season. Franklin defeated Mount St. Joseph, so there's a little bit of a tie there. And then the last one in this bracket is 8-seeded Widener going to 2nd-seeded Case Western Reserve, which I know is the matchup absolutely everybody was picking. From Philadelphia to Cleveland, yeah, it's under 500 miles. I don't know what else these teams have in common.
No, I mean, just coming from completely different worlds. And we actually saw early on Sunday afternoon, some complaining by the Widener folks who didn't appreciate being an 8-seed and being sent on the road, which I think, I guess, we could expect them being sent on the road. But this is probably as good a matchup as they could have hoped for. I mean, a team from out of the UAA, not a power conference, and doesn't have a lot of convincing wins during this season. Case Western Reserve did go 10-0. They did earn the home game. They definitely deserve it. But for Widener, a team that's played well since it lost two games early in the season, lost to Wesley, but beat North Carolina Wesley and another team in the playoffs, and then they lost that 41-0 game to Rowan. They've played really well since then, won the MAC, and get a chance to win in the second round, and maybe, you know, if you look at that bracket, really the two strong teams in the bracket, or the teams you think are the two strong teams, are Whitewater and Capital on the other side.
I tend to think that Case Western hasn't seen anybody nearly as good as North Carolina Wesleyan, which Widener beat, let alone Wesley, which Widener lost to.
Exactly, and Widener may be, you know, set back a little bit by playing the schedule they played in the minds of poll voters because they had lost a couple games early. But when you play that kind of schedule early, they've played teams that are playoff teams. That got them ready for that stretch run through their conference. And now, seeing a team like Case Western Reserve in the playoffs, certainly there's not going to be any kind of talent on the field that they haven't seen before.
We glossed over this top bracket a little bit, but go back to a couple of these games. Hartwick traveling to Curry. Curry getting a home game for the first time. Five-time defending champions of the NEFC. Your reward is you got to face a team that scored 72 points last week.
Yeah, I mean, they did do it in four overtimes, but we talk about the leagues earning respect, different conferences, different teams earning respect. This is Curry's chance to earn respect. There's no other way to put it. You have a team that in Hartwick that has been beaten twice this year, lost to a team in week one, 48-21 to Western New England, that that Curry already beat during the season. So, it doesn't make sense, but that's something that should give Curry a little confidence in hosting this game and playing a team that lost to a team that it beat.
Talking about confidence in conferences or whatever, you really look at this East bracket, and there's three Empire 8 teams in this bracket. There's Hartwick, of course, the champion, the 7 seed. St. John Fisher went 9-1, lost to Hartwick in a nail biter on the road. They're the 2 seed, and Ithaca got in as the 8 seed. It really kind of shows the way that maybe the paradigm shifting a little bit. Hopefully, not just for this season, I would say too, in terms of the way the committee selects and seeds and pairs the brackets.
Yeah, if you play a strong conference in a strong conference, and you play a good non-conference games, or you perform well against that slate, you're going to get rewarded come playoff time. Ithaca was a team that we had almost dropped off the board after they lost a couple games early. But again, as we talked about with some of these other teams that lost games early, stay with it, stay in the mix, keep your hopes alive. And the way Ithaca finished the season, very strong against Alfred and against Cortland State in that big Cortica Jug rivalry game, they put themselves right back in the mix, and all of a sudden you have to consider them. But then again, that reward is you go to Mount Union in the first round.
When you're the third Pool C team in a region, there are years where you're not even going to get on the board, let alone get considered and selected into the tournament. I want to look back at some of the things that may get lost out of Saturday's action. One of the things was the way the Baldwin-Wallace Capital game came down. Baldwin-Wallace scored a touchdown with 20 seconds left to put them down by one. Kick the extra point would have tied the game, but instead they elect to go for two, and Capital comes up with the big stop.
And think about that, how close the difference between getting into the playoffs and not being in the playoffs is. Capital wins that game 17-16 with that stop, and they get the trip to Whitewater. If they lose that game, Capital's now out of the field. They're 7-3, and somebody else somewhere across the country, maybe it's Whitworth, maybe it's Wheaton, maybe it's a team that we haven't talked about, is in the field. So the difference between, you say football's a game of inches, and it's a cliche, but in a lot of ways it is, and what happens in those inches spreads all across the country.
Similarly, in the last second, Wartburg comes up with a late touchdown to tie Central, and then Central does what Central does, comes down and kicks a game-winning field goal to win it.
Yeah, and Central's taken a lot of flack this season because they play a lot of teams closely, but they just win. And they deserve that one seed. They're 10-0. That home game is going to be great for them, especially getting the team that they're going to get, Olivet, with 6-4 team in the playoffs. And I mean, it's they're going to be interesting to watch, especially with that bracket that they're in, having so many teams that are kind of even, and Central. We're going to see if they can continue that magic.
Good news for Central fans. Vance Skuring, the star running back for the Dutch, got all the running back carries for Central yesterday, at Saturday. He and Tim Connell were the only Dutch to carry the football in that game. Some of the other things that went on, of course, it was a big rivalry weekend. Because the NESCAC doesn't play in the playoffs, and we've all had our say on that, we don't get to talk about the NESCAC too much this time of year, but the scene watching ESPN's game day broadcast from Williamstown on Saturday with the Williams and Amherst fans back there really kind of touched, it hit a lot of people, including Chris Fowler, the ESPN anchor, who seemingly came away with an incredible amount of respect for what goes on at Division III and at Amherst and Williams.
Yeah, we were told that Chris Fowler participated in that walk that Williams does after the game, walking up the street and in Williamstown to the barbershop to get their head shaved, and he said it was just one of the neatest things he'd ever seen in 20 years of covering college football. Just the enjoyment of it is so pure, and that's something that we harp on, and we even talk about this level being the most pure level of football because you're playing for the love and not for your scholarship. And for somebody that is used to coming and watching big-time football and big-time athletes to come into Division III and to just spend a day with a Division III team or a couple of teams and get that impression is really impressive.
We touched on the Monon Bell, we touched on the Cortica Jug. The game you were at, the game between Hampton Sydney and Randolph-Macon, didn't turn out the way the Randolph-Macon grad and you wanted to see, I'm sure, but it was. You can tell us a little bit more about Saturday.
Yeah, well, it definitely didn't turn out that way, but I got just a great feeling going back to campus. As an alum, as a player, when you've won a championship before, you kind of judge your own team against the teams that are on the field and say, we could have beat them. We would never lose to these guys. And part of that was there still, but part of it was just great to see Randolph Macon be back up in the mix, playing that game for something. Part of it is the rivalry thing that anyone who's been in a rivalry game, you know, the Monon Bell people will be able to identify with this, and people have done Amherst-Williams and all the other rivalries. When you go back to campus and you see people you haven't seen in years, that's wonderful. But I think the thing that really stood out to me the most is just how far Randolph-Macon has come in hosting the game. Some of the things they did yesterday by adding the end zone seats, they added a great big grandstand for Hampton-Sydney fans, and the tailgate was great, and all that just added to the atmosphere, and it really was an atmosphere that compared to some of the best things we've seen across the country, and that's something that makes me proud as an alum.
And of course, one game that you can't really ignore was the final game of the night, Occidental at Whittier. Occidental needed to win that game to win a share of the SCIAC title and really throw Pool C into a tizzy and give Cal Lutheran the automatic bid and put Redlands on the bubble and put Occidental on the bubble. And in the end, it was Occidental 30, Whittier 20. I'm sorry, that was just the fourth quarter. The final score was Whittier 67, Occidental 61.
I mean, just a tremendous game to have been at or to have been listening to on the radio. I mean, put yourself on the committee. And you guys are already, you can't wait for that game to end because it was a 10 o'clock Eastern time kickoff, 7 o'clock in California. So they're already working on the field, and that game has major implications, as you just mentioned, on how things shake out in the field. And you're listening to that game, and the fourth quarter is going score, score, back and forth. I mean, like you said, it was 33-20 just in the fourth quarter, the 67-61 final. If you look at the box score, I mean, it just stretches down a whole page. It's amazing what happened. And it's not the only game. It wasn't even the highest scoring game of the day.
It was the highest scoring game in regulation, and the reason why was three scores for Occidental in the last 3 minutes and 10 seconds. They got the ball with 3:12 left, a quick one-play strike to cut the lead from 67-42 to 67-48, recovered an onside kick, got in the end zone 8 plays later, a minute 13, 67-54, recovered another onside kick, 67-61 on a 26-second drive with 23 seconds left. It was just onside kick after onside kick. Whittier never got the football back and just managed to have just enough offense with the 67 points they scored already to hold on and win that game.
Yeah, and that shows a lot about Occidental, because when you're down by 25 points, 67-42, you think, man, this thing's over, especially with only a couple minutes left in the game. 3:10 was when the first of those last three scores came. But it must have just been wonderful just to watch a team, just amazing rush to score and score again and score again. And on the Whittier side, they're going, please, clock, run, we need it, just time, just go away, let it end. And what a great way for Whittier to end the season, where they weren't going to the playoffs, but they had a way to affect the playoffs and go into the off season on a good note.
Heck of a 3 hours and 40 minutes that game was. This wraps up our ATN podcast for the preview of Week 12, end of Week 11. Headed to the playoffs. Get your picks in this week. The Pick'em contest is up as we speak. We'll have team capsules, and we'll have some preview stories and features on teams that are in the field of 32. For Keith McMillan, I'm Pat Coleman saying goodbye.